You may be seated. Our third case this morning is 2019-416, Belinda Torres Friedenberg versus Keith A. Friedenberg et al. For the appellant, Mr. Stafford.
Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the court. My name is Joseph Stafford. I, along with Nicole Cruz, represent the appellant, Dr. Belinda Torres. I reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. In reference to this case, the issue concerns the doctor-patient privilege, the psychologist-client privilege in a domestic relations case. Dr. Torres is a psychologist with advanced training in the field of psychoanalysis. In order to become an analyst, Dr. Torres underwent psychoanalysis in her training. It is those training records that are at issue in this case. The lower court determined that because Dr. Torres filed a complaint for divorce and requested the allocation of parental rights responsibilities as well as spousal support, that the privilege of those records were in fact waived merely by filing a complaint for divorce. The lower court determined that on the issue of allocation of parental rights responsibilities, whenever a person requests that, they waive their mental health records in terms of their issues that they present to the court.
So, counsel, for clarification, this was not done for treatment, but for certification in her profession.
Correct, but it's also treatment records. In other words, in order to become an analyst, you undergo psychoanalysis. They are treatment records to that standpoint, but also they are her training records. The husband in this case weaponized the issues over this, requested the records, and to be clear, there was never an issue raised in the lower court that there was.
How old were the records?
They were extensive. They went back years from her training, I believe, from being a psychologist all the way through the period of time of the commencement of the proceedings. So I believe four to five years.
So they weren't all for certification.
Well, I believe they were from the standpoint of the records that the trial court released. Dr. Jan Kite's records were, in fact, the training records that were in actuality treatment records.
But there was current treatment records, the ones that were relevant to, I guess, treatment up until the time of the proceedings, what happened to those?
Those were released by the trial court. There was never a claim in the lower court that Dr. Belinda Torres had any mental health issue that affected her ability to parent the children or affected her ability to be gainfully employed. The record in this case is clear that the parties were married approximately 28 years. There were four children born as issue of the marriage. Both parties were gainfully employed, and there was never an issue. What happened in this case, in order to weaponize the proceedings, the husband in the case requested the release of the records.
Counsel, did the wife also request his records?
Unfortunately, yes. That was a knee-jerk reaction to what occurred. And as my mother often said when I was a child, two wrongs don't make a right. That should not have occurred, but it did, in fact. The issue of the records also becomes a game in domestic relations proceedings. What I mean by that is that if the other side has treatment, one side can go and say, get treatment, knowing that the records could, in fact, be disclosed, and that's what occurred in this case.
Go ahead.
Well, the difficulty I'm having is just with the statutory language that puts a parent's mental and physical health of everyone involved when allocating parenting, that the court shall consider the mental and physical health of everyone involved when allocating parenting rights. So doesn't that, just by statute, isn't the court required to look at mental health records?
No, it doesn't.
If there are any.
I would disagree. Under 310904, it's F1E, that particular says that the court shall consider it. But if you look at the privilege statute under 2317 2B and 4732.19, there's not exceptions for it. What the issue has to be is, what do we value as being the utmost importance? We contend it's the privilege that should be, in fact, upheld over the best interest analysis. The best interest analysis fails on many fronts because it goes to a case-by-case basis, and a case-by-case basis often subjects a litigant to the hazards of fortune. In other words, what kind of luck do you have with the judge that you have? Who's on the other side? Who is your lawyer? And so I have recommended to this court that, in fact, we adopt one simple rule. And that rule is, if in fact it is an issue, before you release privilege or that you set aside privilege, you have an independent medical exam conducted to see if the mental health issue of a party is actually in play. Because the best interest of a child is truly best served by having a parent being treated for any mental health issue versus the notion that we look at the person's records, we encourage the release of records, which thereby negates a person seeking treatment.
But didn't the magistrate actually find these relevant, certain ones?
Well, that's the case-by-case basis. If you look at the different orders in this case, they're all over the place. It's a stew of mixture of concepts and ideas. First, the magistrate indicates they would not be released. Then the magistrate said only certain relevant records would be released.
It's
to
some kind of in camera.
In camera,
right?
And then would be released only to the lawyers to use at trial. And then the trial court came in and said, nope, they're all in. If you ask for custody or ask for the allocation, or if you ask for spousal support, they're released automatically. And it skips over even an in-camera inspection of the records under the lower court's rulings. So what we are recommending is do away with that. Have one simple rule. If, in fact, a person's mental health is in play, in other words, there are issues raised, we don't leave it to a case-by-case basis. We don't lead it to
But how is your suggestion protective if there's an independent examination? Let's say it's for that moment, it's for that particular time. Why isn't an in-camera inspection a safeguard enough?
Because it leads to the inequities of the situation. In other words, it depends on the judge and what they view to be relevant to the case, as well as how important is the privilege. It's a weighing factor. It's a balancing factor. It's often called the Hearns case, which we cited in our briefs, and the Louisiana Supreme Court in the matter of Smith versus Kavanaugh talks about that and says do away with that analysis, because that analysis just leads to the luck of the draw at the time if the records get released. If in fact you follow the revised code under 310904C, the trial court has the ability to order psychological evaluation at any given point in time in the allocation of parental rights responsibilities.
But how, isn't that a one-time examination, a one-time look at what if a parent, I know it's not the facts of this case, but what if a parent, I'm sorry, has had delusions about harming his or her children?
Well, what the standard I'm advocating for is just that circumstance. So in other words, if in fact the medical examination is inadequate and there's independent proof of potential harm to a child, then in fact the records could be looked at. So in other words, the privilege is upheld. And the reason why the privilege must be upheld...
Where would there be independent support for that? How would that come to?
Let's say a person had delusions, and in fact, the person is walking down the street having delusions of grandeur, and the police arrest the person or take the person to a mental health hospital, there would be records.
But absent any of that, there's no way to investigate that.
Correct, because what you want to concern yourself with is proper mental health treatment in our society of individuals that live in this state. We want to encourage
people. Counsel, under your scenario, would that independent third exam, or whatever you want to call it, court-ordered exam, would that individual be privy to the medical records?
No, they would not.
Well, isn't that kind of goes against medical treatment for psychological, that they need a big picture? They just can't do a slice and out of, you know, a day and try and render. I don't know that you'd get a professional that would do that.
Well, in actuality, what actually occurs with these independent psychological evaluations, which I have seen occur, there's actually psychological testing that occurs. There's the MMPI, there's the Rorschach test, there's clinical interviews, there's collection of information from collateral sources. And it's just not where the person goes in one day and then there's a clean bill of health rendered or a bad bill of health rendered. There is much more involved in a psychological evaluation. In actuality, what occurs is the independent forensic psychologist normally is appointed. There's meetings, there's clinical interviews, as well as psychological testing that occurs. And we are recommending that because if, in fact, you're in the middle of a divorce case And you have to, as a practitioner, you have to advise your client that if, in fact, under the current law, you go in for treatment, your mental health records could be disclosed.
Okay, let me ask you. The statute, in essence, says the court shall consider mental evaluation when child custody is at issue, correct?
It shall consider it, yes.
Okay. But then your next statement was, privilege, this medical records privilege prevails over the best interest of the child.
Correct.
Was your statement.
Yes.
You believe that universally.
Yes.
How would we, in light of the statute, incorporate that into something that could benefit all of the domestic clients in this state?
Well, let me say this. Let's say you have the typical case where the parties, like in this case, have children 15, 16 years old, and there is a mental health issue. The court's jurisdiction over these children would only be until age 18. So we'd invade the privilege, release the records, impede proper treatment of the parent, and then where is the court after age 18 for this person or this child? It's so temporal, the issues in most of these custody cases, we seem to forget the court goes away at age 18.
But I'm asking you how this could be done in light of the statute. Isn't this something that the legislature would have to consider, not the court?
Well, the legislature did actually consider it and enacted 4732.19 that protects the psychological records. And so in reference to this, it's quite simple. The court has the jurisdiction to order a psychological evaluation
sure.
before privilege is released. In this particular case, they jumped to the release of records before there was any issue even raised concerning a person's mental health. The danger here is, no matter what is done in this case, the court has enacted, and the 11th District has stated, if you ask for the allocation of parental rights responsibilities, or you ask for spousal support, there is a release of privilege. There is no safeguard of the privilege in this case, as authored by the trial court and the 11th District Court of Appeals. In order to save my time for rebuttal, I would respectfully request that the 11th District's Court of Appeals decision be reversed, and we enact the proposition number 4 that we set forth as far as the rule of law for the issue of privilege.
Counsel, just one quick point of clarification. Did we accept Proposition 4? When we granted jurisdiction, did we accept Proposition 4?
I don't believe so in reference to...
So why would we rule on Proposition 4?
Well, the Proposition 4 goes into the other issues, and in reference to the standard to be used, that's what I am recommending the court
to
use.
Was that raised below?
It was raised below in terms of the issues of how this privilege would be working and what our issues would be to preserve the privilege.
Counsel, before you sit down, I guess where I'm having a hard time with your argument is it doesn't seem to be very tethered to the statute. And I guess I'm curious, the statute says, In the privilege statute, it says if the privilege does not apply, a physician may be compelled to testify or just submit discovery. And I'm paraphrasing, but then it says, as to issues that relate casually or historically to physical or mental injuries that are relevant to issues in the medical claim, civil action, et cetera. Why aren't you simply arguing that that wasn't met?
Well, in reference to the underlying issue of the lower court indicated just because she requested certain issues, there was a complete waiver of privilege.
Right. But so the statute says that it has to relate causally to physical or mental injuries. Do you think, did the court ever make that finding?
The court never made that finding.
Well, so why do we need to rewrite the statute?
I'm not asking to rewrite the statute. I'm asking that the general waiver that the trial court and the Court of Appeals determined to be in place be reversed. That in this actual case, there was no claim of mental health issues being involved in the matter whatsoever. Hence why I advocate for some different standard on how we determine what's in play in the trial court. With that being said, I would like to reserve, I think I have about a minute left. Thank you.
Good morning. Madam Chief Justice, Justices of the Supreme Court, my name is Gary Okin, and I represent the appellee Keith Friedenberg in this case. In a kind of an answer to your question, Justice, there was no argument because there were, the trial court actually did a relevance analysis, which, while not specifically stated in the order, was historically and found to
did the trial court ever find that these records related causally or historically to physical or mental injuries that are relevant to issues in the case?
By a presumption of regularity of her proceedings, she did. And the fact is she had the records, she reviewed them.
All these records were causally or historically related to physical or mental issues in the case?
The records that she released are presumed by presumption of regularity to be historically relevant to the case. And in kind of response to
she never really applied that standard, did she? The standard just seemed to be that this is a divorce proceeding, so the records come in.
Only relevant records came in. She specifically indicated that there was a finding of relevance. There's a presumption of regularity in those findings, and only relevant records came in. And to the question of the Chief Justice, the fact of the matter is we have 10 years of consistent psychoanalysis.
Counsel, why did you believe the records would be relevant when you initially made the request?
We have cameras here, and so I didn't say anything in my pleadings, and there was a reason for that, because I don't want to spread on the record what we believed at the time. Why did I believe that? Because this lady had been in counseling for 10 years. One of the children was not living with her at all at the time, and the other child was presumably living with her 50% of the time. There was a legitimate concern during trial stage that there was a mental health problem. Now, did I want to put that on the record?
That was disputed by your opposing counsel. They said that was never in play here. And well, discovery is not supposed to be a fishing expedition. If you had some good faith belief that there'd be a record where she has frequent thoughts of harming the children, I mean, I can see where that would be relevant. But did you have anything like that when you made
We had a 10-year record of daily counseling, or at least 10 years, in psychoanalysts that had not subsided at all in that 10-year period.
But that counseling might have been helpful.
There's no question, and we're not debating for a moment, that the court does not have to look at the statute requires that you consider, that the court, trial court, consider mental health issues. It requires it. We are not saying that that opens the door, nor would what we would suggest that come out of this court suggest that. We are suggesting that the court has a duty. Once a subpoena is issued, the court can't just let those records go to somebody else. They have to go to third parties or attorneys. They have to go to the court. There has to be a determination of relevance, both historically and factually. All of that has to exist, and what the 11th District did on top of that, in order to protect the person whose records were being sought, what the Court of Appeals did, I mean the 11th Trial Court and the 11th District approved, is in the only case I've seen, they issued a protective order. And that protective order addressed the issue of the concern that those records would be made public. And so I believe that what the 11th District decided is what this court should affirm, that process needs to go forward in that manner.
Counsel, didn't the 11th District, they determined these records were relevant to determine spousal support?
They did.
How could these records be relevant in that regard?
Okay, well, first of all, the statute 3105.18c, I believe, too, requires a court to consider mental health issues in determining spousal support. So it is the same analysis that we have for everything, with the same confidentially and protective order provisions. The statute requires that consideration. The court has to determine relevance, once again, as this court did.
Did the magistrate articulate, after that in-camera inspection took place, I'm going to allow the parties to see these records, and these are why they're relevant?
Or? She just, there was no specific language or determination. And in fact, the argument, as I understood it from below, is that it wasn't that there was any specific relevance argument that appellant argued. They argued we're entitled to any of the records. Okay, and so there wasn't a relevance. In fact, if I lifted a stack of documents over there after the determination of relevance, there was never an objection made by appellant to any one of those documents. They never came into court and said, we got these records, now these aren't relevant. Well, that was his burden, her burden to do. So what I'm suggesting is the standard that the 11th District established, the trial court in the 11th District establishes, both meets the requirement of the statutes, and on top of that, is protective in nature. An IME is not going to, an evaluation, in any evaluation that I've ever been involved in, and I've been practicing domestic law for a number of years, the court needs those records. They have to get the IME needs the records. He can't make a decision about anything, you know, any kind of understanding of the party. He needs, he or she who is the IME needs the records. And, you know, I when I was driving down from Cleveland to this argument, it occurred to me that this court's already, in effect, addressed this issue. You have Superintendent's Rule 48, which allows guardian ad litems to get all of these records upon request. So this court has already addressed this issue in the rules of superintendents. They're relevant, they're protected, there are confidentiality provisions.
But that rule that the jail gets the records, that can be subject to objections by the parties, and then you go through the analysis, just like what we have here.
That's correct, Your Honor, and that's what I'm pointing to. And there's a confidentiality provision that the court in this case, the trial court and the 11th District Court of Appeals, in this case, put in there, and with approval, which this court should as well, that there should be a protective order. And that protective order should be to make this all confidential, because it is confidential, it is sensitive, and I'm sensitive to that argument. But it is also necessary to, a statutory requirement, also necessary for the best interest of the child. If there are no further questions, Your Honors, thank you very much.
Thank you.
May it please the court. In reference to this, the fundamental issue is what is going to be valued more, the privilege against disclosure, the balancing of the best interest test. We contend, in reference to our society as a whole, with the gun violence, the drug overdoses, the suicide rates, and the number of divorce cases, that we must protect the privilege. We must, in fact, promote individuals to seek mental health counseling. In reference to the lower court's decision, they indicated, because my client filed for divorce, there was a waiver of privilege due to requesting the allocation of parental rights responsibilities as well as spousal support. The court didn't say there would be a balancing test or an in-camera review. It was a complete waiver of the privilege by merely filing. In this case, we did have two propositions of law. My fourth proposition that I put in the merit brief contains a remedy, what we're looking for the court to do in order to satisfy this. So I humbly request the lower court's decision be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.